If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve@.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Good morning, Steve Dales, Pet World on WGN. And right before the holidays, I am so glad that this book is going to get attention because it is so good. For cat lovers, pay attention. All Cats, All the Time, More of What I Know About Cats by Rachel Giller, who is a cat behavior and retention specialist, certified humane education specialist, the author also of Saving the World, One Cat at a Time. Rachel, congratulations on this book, because as I told you off the air, and I'm happy to say it on the air, this is one of the best cat behavior books I've seen or read in a very long time. Yet, it's not like 45,000 pages long, easy to understand, easy to follow, common sense, more importantly, scientific-backed information. So congratulations on this wonderful book.
Thank you very much. And I really did try to make it full of easy-to-implement and easy-to-understand solutions.
And we'll talk about some of the cat behavior problems in a moment, but I have some questions to ask you first. So there is an image here. I'm going to find it. It's on page 94. So turn to page 94, friends, and you'll see it. Of two cats together, they're leaning side by side. Now, I have a couple of questions about this. So imagine two cats comfortably relaxed, laying where they're touching one another. First of all, they are the most gorgeous cats ever. If the people who have these cats ever want to give up their cats, please give them my name and phone number. That's number one. Where are these cats from? They're beautiful.
Well, almost everybody who reaches out to me via email or text will provide me a picture and say, you know, just so you'll know who the problem child is that you're dealing with, or this is a picture of my cats. So I have a vast library of adorable cat pictures from people who reach out to me via the email, through my website, and I thought it would be a lovely idea to include some of these real-life, you know, cats who I help stay in their homes or I help solve their behavior problems in the book.
All right, so these cats are laying side by side. They're touching one another at the shoulder. They're both looking probably at the photographer taking the picture. But when cats lay comfortably like that and are actually touching one another, what are they saying? And I ask because of this. I believe.
Wait a second.
Okay. I ask because of this. I believe that cats are always, let me say that again, always communicating with us. They're always telling us something, even if it's as subtle as what I described. So first off, what I described, what are they saying? And secondly, do you agree the cats are always talking to us, even if they're not actually talking to us?
Yes, cats are master communicators, and they're always using their bodies and their minds together to communicate not only to us, but to other cats, perhaps other predators, perhaps other invaders. And I want to mention that all of these quote-unquote others can be real or imagined. So yes, cats are always communicating.
And when they're laying side by side and look relaxed and are actually touching one another, as opposed to laying, for example, on one side of the couch is one cat, on the other side of the couch is another cat. When they're actually touching one another and they're relaxed, what does that mean?
Well, sharing territory to a cat is a huge big deal because they are extremely territorial creatures. So cats who are sharing territory have love and trust for each other. Then we take it a step further, and these two cats that you're referring to are actually touching each other. These are cats who may be bonded. They may be cats who have known each other for a long time. They may be cats who have accepted each other's status in the household. And for a myriad of reasons, they trust each other. They have an affinity for each other, and they're able to share territory together. And anyone listening who is a cat lover knows that this is a very big deal in having a harmonious household when you have more than one cat.
You write in the book that my cat likes to be alone. That's what clients tell you, you say. Do you think the cats actually don't need us except to feed them, as some people might suggest?
I think that this is a myth. Cats are creatures who love company. They love to be taken care of. They love affection. Many cats love our laps. They love us to play with them. So cats are social creatures. I think they get a bad rap because cats are independent hunters, but they are not independent beings. They like to be with people, and they very much enjoy our love and our affection.
Yeah, the technical term for that is facultatively social, which means essentially social, but on their own terms, which is how cats pretty much do everything. You know, the trivia question that is sometimes asked is, why do cats, more cats, die than anything else? And people will say cancer, heart disease, and they'll go on, kidney disease. And all those things are terrible. However, the number one reason is behavior. Is that part of the reason why you, or maybe the entire reason why you did this book?
Absolutely. I became very interested in cat behavior. It was sort of a natural offshoot of what I did in my quote-unquote real life as an educational psychologist. And being on many boards at animal shelters, I quickly came to see that so many cats were surrendered or abandoned due to behaviors that people just found unacceptable. Many people will not tolerate a cat, you know, not using the litter box, peeing in a bed, peeing on a couch. Cat pee is pretty smelly, and other cat behaviors that people just find very difficult to live with. And many people do not understand that there are cat behaviors out there, and there are people who can help solve these behavior problems. These problems are fixable. These problems are solvable. And so many people don't realize that there are certified cat behaviors out there who can help them with these problems.
Absolutely right. I'm so glad you said that. What is the number one issue that you see?
For me, hands down, number one issue, litter box problems.
All right. So when we come back after the break, that is exactly what we'll talk about. We'll also talk about some other behavior issues, like what happens when you bring a new baby into the home. All of that to be talked about with the author of All Cats, All the Time, More of What I Know About Cats by Rachel Geller, who is right here when we come back on WGN. Rachel Geller is the author of All Cats, All the Time, More of What I Know About Cats. And, you said litter box issues are number one when it comes to your list. It turns out you're not alone. The number one most concerning behavior problem, and also the number one behavior explanation for cats being relinquished, is litter box issues, as you put it, sometimes called inappropriate elimination. So let's talk about it. So the cat is thinking outside the box. What is the first thing you want to know?
So what I'll usually do is go down sort of a little questionnaire that I have and try to find out the type of box, the location of the box, the size of the box, kind of the basics. Because if I can find a simple fix to the problem, that's where I want to go first. So, for example, many people have a cover on their box because they're thinking like a human and they're thinking their cat wants some privacy, or they're thinking, well, I don't really want to look at that poop in the box. But the fact is, cats do not want privacy. Cats, when they're in that box, want to be able to see all the way around them. They want what I call a clear visual field. They want to know they can escape if they need to. So a cover blocks that view and hinders their ability to escape. So many times I'll say to the client, let's remove the cover. And often that will solve the problem.
Now, I want to stop you right there because I want to make it clear that, yes, statistically, you're totally correct. However, there are many cats out there. Cats are individuals, and there are many cats out there that actually prefer the cover because they feel more secure. So would you agree that you kind of have to feel and figure out what's right for your individual cat, or in a multi-cat home, what might work for one cat might not work for another cat?
Absolutely. Just like people, cats have their preferences. So if you're listening and you have a covered box and your cat is using that box, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Leave it alone. Your cat is fine. But if your cat is not using the box and you do have a cover, that could be a good place to start. So just like people, we all have our own, you know, security, comforts, and we all have our own, you know, means of survival and survival instincts. So, for example, I won't eat something that falls on the floor. I must have a very high survival instinct because I don't want to eat anything that might be poisoned. But if something drops on the floor, my husband will pop it in his mouth and still eat it. So his survival instincts are different than mine. Cats are the same way. We all have our own levels of, you know, what we might be risk averse to, what we're comfortable with in terms of taking risks, and our cats are the same way.
Yeah, I go with the 5-second rule, right? If it's on the ground for more than 5 seconds, maybe not. Otherwise, I do exactly what your husband does. I'm in the same camp and scarf it up, especially if it's something I like. Now, I want to talk about the substrate or the litter itself. How often is that an issue? Because today, there are so many choices of cat litters out on the market.
There are so many choices. Now, there are many cats who do not like the additives. They don't like the perfumey smell or, you know, quote-unquote fresh scents, because they want something that resembles what they might find outside. And the last time I checked, the ground wasn't scented with perfume. So many cats want something that resembles something soft and sandy like they would find outdoors. Now, again, cats are individuals, and cats get used to things. If your cat was in a shelter and the type of litter that was used is scented or does have a perfumey scent and the cat was using that litter, then you may want to stay with that type and brand of litter. So it's all very individual, but in general, cats like something that's soft, that has a sandy texture, and that is not overly scented.
So what about the pearl litters, the wood chip litters? And I don't know, there's so many choices, as I said.
There are so many choices, and again, it comes down to personal preference, and some people prefer what might be a little more convenient for them, or they're thinking of things that are more environmentally correct. So if you're, you know, it boils down to if your cat uses it and your cat is happy with it, that's the litter you should stay with. The worst thing to do is just to buy any old litter that's on sale each time you go shopping and constantly change the litter. That's something that will probably cause litter box aversion. If you find something your cat likes, stay with it.
Is it sometimes just a matter of the person not scooping the litter box or the people in the household often enough?
Absolutely. Cats are fastidious, clean creatures, and they want that litter box to be clean. So it's very important to check that litter box 2 to 3 times a day, scoop if you see, you know, poops or peas, keep that litter box clean, and your cat will be much more likely to use that box. And also, there are some cats who don't like to pee and poop in the same box. So it's really important to clean that box, make sure the litter looks and smells fresh. And, you know, we wouldn't want to go in a dirty toilet either, so I can understand.
You know, what you just said is so true about that some cats, some of the time. So here's the thing. If you put two litter boxes side by side, and people will think, okay, I've got three cats in the house, the number of litter boxes should not be, if you have three cats in the house, we'll talk about that, the ideal number of litter boxes in a moment. But let's say you have two that are side by side, and they're in the same room just next to one another. Mostly I say, well, you've just created one giant box to a cat. You don't have two boxes there. You have one. But other cats will say, oh, now I've got two. This is the solution. I could do number one in one box and number two in another box. Is this where things are just sometimes individual depending on the household?
It is so true. You know, cats perceive their world differently just as we do. And some cats, if there is a box side by side, their view of it is just one large area to eliminate. Other cats perceive that as two very different areas and will section it off. This is the one I pee in, and this is the one I poop in. And that's why sometimes when I'm working with clients, I will recommend, well, let's try placing some boxes on different levels, different rooms, different areas of your home. Now, I know you don't want litter boxes all over your home, but this is temporary because this way we can figure out where your cat wants to go, where your cat is the most comfortable, and once we figure that out, then we can pick up the boxes that the cat is not using.
Well, I want to talk about location, location, location of those litter boxes, and we will do that and talk about more cat behavior issues, including what happens when you bring baby home, when we come back here on WGN. So in my book, Ask the Dog, what's described are ways in which we can look at a dog and then ask that dog by its body posture what that dog is saying. Can we now pet the dog? Does that dog want to play? What is that dog telling us? Because always, and I do mean always, dogs are communicating with us. Sometimes it's pretty clear. I mean, when a dog is growling, you know, I mean, yeah, stay away from the dog. But oftentimes, what they are saying is subtle. So let's say you're walking down the street and you say, can I pet your dog? And the person says yes, but the dog might be saying no. How can you tell? So here are 10 somewhat subtle ways in which a dog might be saying no. Number one, the tail is tucked, you know, kind of tucked underneath. You know, we've all seen that, but that is certainly one way in which the dog may be saying no. The tail wagging. So people think, oh, the tail is wagging back and forth really fast. And that's a happy dog because we've been taught that a happy dog will wag its tail. And indeed, tail wagging is an expression of excitement. But excitement doesn't always equate to joy, does it? Think about that. And a downward tail wagging really fast, that's a dog that's often afraid or concerned. And that dog is saying, don't touch me right now. The ears are pinned back. That's number three on this list. When the ears are erect, straight up, or pinned back, that dog is saying, maybe not now. A piloerection, or the hair literally standing up on the back of a dog's neck. Now, think about it. When you're afraid or someone frightens you, there's that expression, oh, the hair went up at the back of my neck, right? And that literally does happen with people, and it does happen with dogs that are very afraid. The next one, eyes dilated, or sometimes what's called a whale eye. It's when the whites of the eyes are most prominent. That dog is then afraid. Lick lipping is another. Yes, the dog might have just had peanut butter, but it could be also a sign of concern or fear. Yawning is an expression of fear or anxiety. a vocalization, clearly snarling or growling, yeah, we know, and that can be an obvious one, but certainly one I should mention. A dog is standing stiffly. Its tail may be pointing straight out, like frozen. And finally, a dog that refuses to make eye contact and is staring intensely the other way or staring at you. Either which way, the dog is saying, no, not right now. She is Rachel Geller. She is the author of All Cats, All the Time, More of What I Know About Cats. Rachel Geller is a certified cat behavior and retention specialist, surrender prevention specialist, humane education specialist, a pet chaplain, a fear-free specialist, and a cat-friendly veterinary advocate. My question is, what aren't you?
I'm not someone who can wave a magic wand and solve all cat behavior problems, and that's why I need to keep educating myself on cat behavior.
Well, this book, as I said earlier, I mean, this is one of the best ones I've read in a long time when it comes to cat behavior. And we're talking what you do in the book, by the way, and we won't, you'll have to get the book to do this because we won't have time. You talk about not only litter box issues, which we're talking about now, and there aren't many radio shows that do that, but we are. You talk about scratching, aggression, shy cats. You talk about meeting the baby, which I want to talk about. We'll talk about also with you the importance, the necessity, I would argue, of vertical space. And much more than that, other problems including food obsessions, counter surfing. I mean, your list goes on. And that is why this is such an incredibly good book. Well, really why? It's because the advice for all those things is so, in my opinion, on target. All right, so we're talking about litter box issues, which is a significant, if not the greatest, explanation for people giving up their cat. And as you point out, these things are fixable. But my fault, Rachel Geller, we left something out. And that is the most important thing. So if your cat, I would suggest, is doing something, anything different than what your cat has been doing, then the first thing to think about in my world is the possibility of a medical explanation. And that certainly goes, absolutely, totally, goes for litter box issues. And you do mention that in your book, and you mentioned that it could be hyperthyroid disease, diabetes, arthritis. And I want to talk about arthritis because it is so underdiagnosed in cats, and location of the litter box, because so many people keep a litter box down in the basement. It may work until the cat is 5 or 6 or 7, becomes a bit arthritic, and then is saying, you know, I don't want to go down all those stairs. It hurts to do that. Do you find that is the case as well?
I do. I mean, when I'm working with a client, that's the first thing I say is, have you ruled out anything medical? Because I can give that client all the best litter box advice in the world. And if there is pain or there is some sort of illness going on, we are not going to solve that problem. So we do want to rule out anything medical, because there are so many medical reasons that will cause a cat not to use the box. And once the cat associates the box itself with any kind of pain, she will not want to use that box. And moreover, if the box is up in an attic or in the basement going downstairs, or, you know, if it's just not in a convenient spot in the household and that cat is arthritic or overweight or is having a UTI, it just might be too painful or she can't hold it in and she may not always make it to the box. So we do want to look at all of those medical angles.
How about location? Where should those... So let's say you have... I think we have an average in America of 2.3 cats per household. So let's say that home... I don't know who has the 0.3 cat. But let's say a household has 3 cats. How many litter boxes do you need? And where should those litter boxes be?
So I always recommend at least one more box than the amount of cats you have. So if we have 3 cats, my recommendation is 4 boxes. And my recommendation is to have those litter boxes spread out throughout your home. So when I say 4 boxes, I don't mean 4 boxes in one room. you know, one on one level, another on another level, another in a different room, and so forth. And look at where your cat likes to hang out, or each cat in that multiple cat household. So if one cat enjoys a particular cat tree by a window, well, that would be a good spot to place his box, because we know that he likes that area. So observe where your cats like to hang out, where they create their own safe spaces, and those are always good places to have a box.
All right, so we talked about location, we talked about the litter box itself, we talked about the substrate or the cat litter itself, but there are other reasons why cats think outside the box, and one are the relationship, or is the relationship combined with where the box is, of others in the household, whether they be children or whether it be another cat or cats or a dog or dogs. So how do you kind of work through that?
So, yes, inter-cat, inter-pet relationships have a lot to do with litter box compliance. So first we may start off with simple steps by just having enough boxes throughout the house that the cat can find a safe spot to go. But if that isn't working, we may need to go to the next level and do some work between the cats who don't like each other so much. We might need to do some training to get them to associate nice things when they see each other. We might need to do some work with food to get them to learn that, you know, when that other cat is around, I'm getting delicious treats. Maybe that cat's not so bad after all, and I can stop ambushing him in the box. So there are all kinds of behavioral interventions to create positive associations using food, using interactive play, using puzzle feeders to create more positive relationships between the cats. So we want to start off with providing enough safe spaces, but we may need to elevate that to more intense behavioral training to actually relearn good relationships between the cat and cat, cat and dog, cat and kid, whatever's going on.
Yeah, and also ensure that the kids are not jumping all over where the litter box is, and maybe the location isn't quite right. You know what, though? There's so much more in the book about this issue that we just don't have time to talk about on the radio. All Cats, All the Time, that's the name of Rachel Geller's book. And there are other topics to talk about, like bringing home babies. I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about the environment which are greatly indoor cats now, the environment in which they live, and what we must, in my world, I think that's the right word, must do for those cats. And we'll talk about all of that with Rachel Geller when we come back on WGN. The book is called All Cats, All the Time, More of What I Know About Cats. It's called that because her first book was called Saving the World, One Cat at a Time. And this is kind of volume two, All Cats, All the Time, More of What I Know About Cats. And we were talking about the most significant and most common explanation for relinquishing cats to shelters, and the most often expressed concern that cat parents have, and that is related to the litter box. And what we didn't talk about is the cat may be doing number one outside the box, and the difference between actually spraying and voiding or urinating, and there is a difference. You explain all of that in the book as well. We just don't have time on the radio, but I think that's an important point to make. One thing I do want to talk about is bringing home the baby. At one point in time, it was thought, keep the cat out of that baby's room, even before the baby arrives. Just don't let the cat in there, so the cat is not accustomed to going in there. But then cats are curious, aren't they, Rachel?
They sure are.
So what should we do, and how can we prepare even in advance, which is, of course, the best thing to do, when you know, because usually you kind of know you're going to have a baby. It just doesn't happen on Tuesday, you go to sleep, and then Wednesday there's a baby. So you can prepare. What should people do?
You can. I mean, you know, you've known for maybe 9 months that this baby is coming, but to your cat, in one day, her entire world is turned upside down. But there are things that we can do to prepare the cat for the baby's arrival. And one thing that I recommend is start to sprinkle your arms or your hands with the products you'll be using with your baby. Baby powder, baby oil, the wipes, things that you will be using to have a new scent. It's a good idea to start using those before the baby comes. Sprinkle them on your hands, arms, and so forth. The other thing is the room will be set up. Do, absolutely do, let your baby go into, I'm sorry, let your cat go into the baby's room and smell the new furniture, the new place where the diapers are going to be, the new toys. Let the cat smell. Let the cat scent deposit. Let the cat mark this area as a feel-good, friendly area to the cat. I've been in here. I've investigated. I am scenting it, so it is mine. This is something that I feel comfortable with. And this will go a long way to your cat feeling okay and not stressed when the baby comes home and occupies this room, because the cat has already explored the room and deemed it okay, deemed it safe, and it has been marked with her scent, which is very important to a cat.
So when you said mark the room earlier, marked with your scent is what you just said, I want to be clear that you're not talking about the cat urinating in that room. Explain what you mean.
I am not. So thank you. So cats mark with their chins. They have deposit glands around their chins, and they also have scent deposit glands in their paw pads. So when you see a cat rubbing at chin height your leg or a leg of furniture or a bureau, she is placing her scent deposits on that item. And then the next time she comes upon that item, she will recognize her own deposits, and that will make her feel safe, secure. I've already delineated this, that this is an okay, stress-free spot. So by letting our cat go into the baby's room and mark with her scent deposits through her chin and paws, we are letting that cat become accustomed to the area and let her get the signal that this place is safe, this place is mine to some extent, this place is an area where I can feel safe and secure. And anyone who has a cat will know that sometimes if we bring something new into the home, the cat really wants to explore that item. And that's what she's doing. She's putting her own scent on that item, and that's how cats provide themselves with a sense of safety and security.
And it's
in the cat world, it's a huge big deal.
It is, and it's interesting. You repeatedly use the word secure. What they're doing is they're depositing pheromones. And I don't want to get too technical, but there's a new line of pheromone product out there called Secure. So it's interesting you said that, and this line of pheromone products is by a French company, and the very company that created the notion of using analogs or copies of these naturally occurring pheromones, which you are talking about, that are available now on Amazon and elsewhere. It's the Secure line of pheromones. Again, much more in the book that we don't have time to go through now about how you can prepare for having a baby and keeping the cat in the household at the same time. So we only have a short period of time here that's left, but I want to talk about the environment which the cat lives in and creating a safe and comfortable and secure space for that cat. And you write a lot about enriching the cat's life every single day. So can you briefly talk about it?
Yes. So I am I am very much in favor of keeping cats indoors, and because of that, I really want to help people keep their cats happy and healthy indoors. So you really need to provide your cats with hunting opportunities, and that means going entirely through the hunting sequence with a wand or fishing pole type toy and letting the cat chase, hunt, pounce, capture, and eat. They must eat something at the end of the game because cats expect to catch and kill, and then they expect to be able to eat what they caught and killed.
Now, that's interesting. I'm stopping you because we don't want them to eat the feather toy. So what do you mean? Explain, and I agree with you, by the way, but I need for you to explain what you mean.
I'm going so fast. So, yes, so they capture the feather toy or they capture whatever is at the end of that string, and we want to immediately follow that capture with food because the whole point to the cat of the hunt is the food. And that is the reason that cats hunt. So we want them to play, to hunt, run around, scurry after things. But at the end of that capture, we want to give them some food. It can be a treat. It can be a portion of their regular food. If they're on prescription food, that is fine as well. But something that they can eat after they have captured and killed that toy.
It is important, and there's much more in the book about meeting the environmental needs of cats, and much more in the book, period. All Cats, All the Time, More of What I Learned About Cats. No, More of What I Know About Cats, but you'll learn by reading the book by Rachel Geller. Rachel, where can people get the book?
The book is available on Amazon.com. And it will be on my website shortly, which is drrachelcatbehavior.com.
Dr. Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, catbehavior.com. Rachel Geller, thank you so much. I get all sorts of lists all the time, like the top dog breeds, top 10 reasons to tell your cat may love you, whatever. Here's a list I've not seen before. It's from a company called Lawn Love, and they ranked the best cities for dog training, and I've never seen this. And they look at various things, including the trainer availability, the trainer affordability, community engagement, and lots of other things. But one thing, unfortunately, they don't consider is the method of training, whether they have more trainers that use positive reinforcement or not. But still, I think it's somewhat interesting. So number 8 on that list is Chicago. Number 7, San Diego. 6 is St. Louis. 5 is Portland, Oregon. 4 is Austin. 3 is Houston. Number 2 is L.A. And the number 1 city for dog training, according to this list anyway, is New York. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.